Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Star Entertainment Group's half-year results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you need to press star 1 on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday the 21st of February 2019. I will now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Matt Bekier, Chief Executive Officer for the Star Entertainment Group. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Vincent, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to our first half 2019 results discussion. I'm here joined today by Chad Barton, our CFO, who will cover the financials, and Greg Hawkins, our Chief Casino Officer. He's in charge of the newly created Gaming Center of Excellence, as well as the international VIP business, and we'll get him to talk to those results. If I can ask you to turn to page number 4 of our presentation, where we touch on the highlights on pages 4 and 5. I'm pleased to report that from a statutory point of view, we've had record results in this half, pretty much by any metric that you would choose to apply. NPAT is up 350%. That's impacted by solid underlying domestic business, a very strong VIP win rate, as well as abnormal items last year, particularly relating to the refinancing of some facilities. That's a good result. On a normalized basis, we report reasonable numbers. They're obviously also impacted by the record win rate, but in the inverse, and I'll let Greg talk to that a bit more. I think what we're seeing is solid VIP volumes, but just an abnormally high win rate, which meant that the players didn't stick around for long enough. In terms of But the way we look at it is we think this is a high-quality, broad-based result that has generated a maximum amount of cash for us. I would especially like to point to the strong domestic performance, which is essentially generating 85% of our earnings. Slots increased in all of our markets. Our slot market share increased in each one of our markets. We had solid table growth, and I think the standout performance for us was the de-risking of our performance through the great work that the team put together with Interim Sovereign Resort that has shown very good performance. The VIP performance, as I said, solid sales. Our visitation was up 10%. Our front money was up. Our front money was pretty much flat, but our win rate was very high, 1.62% relative to last year, where it was substantially below normalized. That has impact on how long players stay around and therefore reduce the normalized turnover. Over the page, our CapEx program continues to go well. Our new assets are performing well. The Gold Coast visitation, for example, is up 11.8% of PCP. The other capital programs are all performing as planned. We are looking forward over the next few months to be able to de-risk Queen's Wharf further, because we're in the final stages of negotiating a fixed price contract for a very large component of that development, which will then see us having about 60% of that CapEx contracted at fixed price. The dividend I referenced is up 40% to 10.5 cents. That reflects the performance that we have, as well as our strong balance sheet. In terms of our trends, it's more of the same. It's very, you know, what we're seeing here in the first 6-7 weeks of the second year is very similar to what we've seen in the first half. Positive domestic revenue trend and the VIP trends, while it's a bit early and a bit difficult to read through with the timing of Chinese New Year, we think it looks very similar to the first half. And I'll let Greg talk about that a bit more. Now, let me now turn to the business, to the performance of the individual properties. On page number 6, we talk about Sydney. Strong statutory result, up 59% at EBITDA, down 6.3% at normalized. That's impacted by the win rate on VIP. Domestic gaming is a standout performance. Visitation was up 1.7%, but the team was able to bend this visitation growth into very strong gaming growth. So slots up 9.9%. Table revenues up 4.9%, and as I said, the highlight, absolute highlight for us, is the performance of the Sovereign Resort, the Interim Sovereign Resort. I know that that was one of the big concerns that investors had at the beginning of the year, how that temporary facility would perform, I think we've now demonstrated that it performs exceptionally well. Our costs were well managed. Operating costs are down 3.9% despite higher domestic volumes, but obviously lower VIP volumes. Page number 7, we show some of the pictures of recently completed assets. Page number 8, we reference the performance in Queensland. Queensland has delivered very pleasing results, and I'm confident that we have more in the tank in Queensland. EBITDA at statutory, both statutory and normalised EBITDA, are at record levels. What's driven that is both strong domestic performance as well as a very strong VIP performance in property. You may recall that, you know, when we built the Darling at the Gold Coast and the integrated gaming rooms, we really pitched it as a premium offer that the Gold Coast didn't have. And it was aimed at both the domestic as well as the international high roller. And I'm pleased to see that that's exactly what's happening in the property. So you see that table revenues is up 10.6%, particularly in the PGRs. And then VIP turnover is up to $6.8 billion. That's pretty much from a standing start 3 years ago. It's now 2.5 times the size of Perth. It's a great result for that property. And it's pleasing to see that there's a lot of first-time customers that are coming to the property that we haven't seen before because it's quite a unique proposition. And we show you the market share and the growth rates in these market segments on page number 9. Page number 10 shows you some of the pictures of recently completed assets as well as the master plan for which we got approval from the state in November 2018. Finally, our next on page number 11, the EGM market share. I think in my 5 years as CEO, I've never been able to report market share growth at the same time in each one of our markets and slots. So I'm very happy that we're seeing that now. Sydney, for me, is the standout. We are at 9.4% in the first half. That really speaks to the interplay, the effective interplay between loyalty, who are migrating customers up from the main gaming floor into private gaming rooms, the interplay of our gaming optimization work that's happening, optimizing the product selection, the location, the configuration, jackpot management, and so on. So a lot of work has gone into it, and it's delivering results. So market share up in Sydney, but also up in Queensland. I would say Gold Coast probably as expected because of the new asset. Brisbane has now stabilized, and the Brisbane property performance, I should just call that out, is very pleasing overall. We had previously said we need to stabilize it and remediate it. That is progressing really well, and we're happy with the performance of the team there. Now let me hand over to Greg to take you through the results in the VIP business.
Thanks, Matt. I'll now take you through our VIP result in a bit more detail. Now there's a few moving parts in the result which I'll step you through. So firstly, on the sales side, we saw solid demand, particularly in the context of softer market conditions globally. Customer numbers were up on last year, which is important, and front money, which we point to as the best proxy for the underlying health of the business, was flat on PCP, which in itself was a particularly strong period. That solid visitation converted to strong actual results, with gross revenue of $337 million, up on last year at a high actual win rate. 1.62% win rate was the equal highest in 5 years, supporting the record cash generation that Matt's referenced. When you look at turnover, however, the normalised results look worse than they are because of the very low turn rate. While it's normal to see an inverse relationship between the win and turns, and you can see an abnormally high win rate in this period, you can see how unusual the 9.7 times turns was with the chart on page 12. For context, in the first half of 17, we had a similar win rate but 12.2 times turns, and the average turns is 13 times over the last 5 years. A key driver of the variance on the PCP is driven by a small number of players last year, generating significant volume in Sydney, which we didn't have this year. This underlines some of the volatility in the business when assessing it across short periods. EBITDA margin has been preserved despite lower volumes and is a continual focus. We've adjusted our base rate card for the current financial year as previously guided and continue to monitor this against market conditions. Now over the page, our normalisation will now include commissions given the increased materiality of revenue share deals. So commissions involving a revenue share now represent 40% of turnover, which is up from 2% 5 years ago. Our credit performance continues to be solid with no change in bad debts as a percentage of net revenue. The 30 to 365 day receivables are up, driven by a small number of players with progress made in collections since the end of December. In closing, let me give you some colour on our fundamental competitive position. So Sydney is the gateway to Australia and the most sought after Australian experience, with a number of our patrons also having family, children in education or businesses here. The Gold Coast, with the addition of the Darling, is now an explicit part of the sales kit, with growth from new and existing players occurring and solid initial demand to what is a relatively immature market. In addition to Sydney and Gold Coast's separate destination propositions, we continue to incentivise players to visit both Sydney and Gold Coast, as opposed to side trips to Melbourne or Auckland. There's clearly further growth here for us, and so far we've only seen 3 of the top 10 customers shared between the two properties. Whilst we continue to monitor macro conditions across the region, including capital availability and liquidity, I remain confident of the attractiveness of this business and the competitive position we're establishing. I'll now hand over to Chad to take you through the financials.
Great, thanks Greg. Good morning everyone. I'm pleased to highlight the financial implications of these results, touching on capital and our continuing focus on costs. With our capital program, our delivery in the first half has been well executed, both on time and on budget. We remain intently focused on ensuring that we spend your capital in the most cost-effective way, in turn maximising shareholder returns on what remains an exciting pipeline of opportunities. Our expectations around full-year CapEx and joint venture contributions remain unchanged from our prior guidance. Our balance sheet remains supportive of our growth, with conservative gearing and appropriate funding facilities in place. We delivered strong cash generation driven by the performance of our domestic business and high win rate in VRP. With our cost base, we continue to ensure it reflects the business conditions we are experiencing, as well as ensuring our customers are provided with a high quality on-property experience. At its heart, our approach is designed to maximise margins and returns across the business. For the half, we've delivered a pleasing performance on costs, being flat on PCP, despite visitation growth. The cost drivers for the half include solid domestic table revenue growth of 6.6%, offset by lower VIP table volumes. Our larger footprint in the Gold Coast and higher service levels in Sydney following the successful transition in the Sovereign Room, as well as inflation and enterprise agreements, continue to impact our cost base, and each year we seek to offset these with cost efficiencies. We continuously monitor our cost base against prospective revenue opportunities to retain the ability to flex our labour and variable costs. Looking ahead, we expect revenue will continue to outpace any growth in costs in future periods. Turning to the waterfall on page 16, this shows the drivers of our half-year earnings across the group. Critically, our most reliable and high-margin domestic business has delivered a strong performance and growing visitation to increase our share of the domestic gaming and non-gaming markets. Executing on this strategy has meant that in a period where VIP earnings were unusually soft, our total earnings still grew to record levels. This, combined with our focus on actively managing our cost base, has led to an increase of 200 basis points to 23.3% margin. Looking at our P&L on slide 17, our actual win rate of 1.62% compares to a normalised win rate of 1.35% and is the driver of the difference between statutory and normalised results at both revenue and EBITDA level. AASB 15 requires separate disclosure of player rebates and commissions, which are down on PCP. This is not only from lower VIP volumes, but also managing margins with rate card improvements. Depreciation and amortisation for the half was up, reflecting new assets commissioned in 2018, and $9 million of accelerated depreciation for assets being refurbished in Sydney. Our expectations remain unchanged for the full-year D&A to be between $200 and $210 million. A significant profit of $4.6 million is from a $9 million gain on disposal of land for the first joint venture tower at the Gold Coast, offset by costs associated with the organisational restructure to centres of excellence. Given the strength of the business and cash flows, dividends are up 40%. In regards to the balance sheet, the main movements are reflective of the progression of our CapEx program and receivables in the VLP business. VLP collections remain solid with $146 million outstanding at the end of December. This is lower than both half and full year balances in FY18, even with the higher win rate. Our balance sheet remains strong, enabling the efficient use of your capital and delivering improved dividend returns to shareholders. Looking at our financial metrics on slide 19, we have trended positively over an extended period of time, focusing on returns and increasing momentum of our business. This half pleasingly underpinned by high quality domestic growth. I'll now hand back to Matt.
Thank you, Chad. And ladies and gentlemen, if I can ask you to turn to page 21, where we now start to look at the future, our trading update and our priorities. I've already referenced the trading update by saying domestic trends very similar to the first half and for the VIP business. The Lunar New Year obviously is creating a little bit of noise, but to the best of our read through, the trends of the first half are holding up into the second half. I just want to say on the VIP business also, there is a little bit of volatility in that business. We are comping the largest year we ever had last year. The global market continues to expand, albeit at a slower rate. And, you know, there's some really bright spots for us here in this business with solid visitation, a great performance of the new asset, and, you know, 30% plus growth in the premium mass business. The fact that, you know, some of the larger players aren't staying as long and it's swinging around, that just happens in this business. So I just want you to keep that in mind as you analyze this performance. In terms of our priorities, they remain largely unchanged. We want to focus on driving the performance across the group, deliver on the next stage of our capital plans, and further commercialize our relationship with Charter Hall and Far East. So we last year, we referenced the fact that we'll be starting to market our assets into the Charter Hall customer base and create a VVIP program. Both of these initiatives have been implemented, and we're starting to slowly expand them now. They will only really get full traction when you have more hotel rooms and when Queen's Wharf will be ready to open up. But we're making progress in operationalizing those relationships. The last one, number four there, implement our operating model, new operating model around the Centres of Excellence. I'd like to just spend a couple more minutes on that to explain what we've done here over the last 9 months. So our Centres of Excellence on page 22, there's two of them right now, gaming, led by Greg Hawkins, our Chief Casino Officer, and marketing, led by our Chief Marketing Officer. What we do in those centres of excellence is rather than fragmenting the decision-making, we are really consolidating all of our talent and all of our capability in one spot to drive the performance across all of our properties. That gives us leverage, that gives us, we think, better decision-making, and it gives us productivity improvements as we don't have to scale up as the business expands. As we look out over the next 5 years, you all know that we have a fantastic development pipeline. That is, you know, executing that is obviously the strategy. What we're trying to do with these centers of excellence is to underwrite the performance of these new assets. We don't just want to get bigger. We want to make sure that our performance lifts at the same time. That's what we're doing here. And the centers of excellence have also created the platforms for us to recruit and bring in global talent from Macau, the Philippines, and Australia to round out the capability that we already have in-house. Now, it's early days, but, you know, we feel pretty positive about what we've seen so far. And if you look at the performance, particularly in slots, I think that's one of the pieces of evidence that we would be pointing to. Let me now turn to what's coming in properties for the next few pages. Page 23 in Sydney, the Sovereign Resort development is on track, and the timeline previously indicated continues on. There's a fair bit of jackhammering right now, but that disruption should start to abate over the next 6 weeks. All the other sort of property development that's underway, particularly the poker share, the main casino entry, the bar and the main gaming floor and so on, that's all on track and will open in the fourth quarter of this financial year. The delivery for the Sovereign Room, as I said, it remains unchanged. The only additional one that I want to put on everybody's horizon is that there will be a refresh of the Darling Hotel that will commence in FY21. That hotel will be then about 8 years old. Now, the hotel is the best hotel in Sydney. We've just retained the Forbes five-star rating for the third year in a row. We want to make sure that the property continues to be fresh and retains its title as the best hotel in Sydney. But that's a bit further down the track, and it's not a particularly large project. Over the page in page Sydney, in page 24, Gold Coast. In the Gold Coast, relative peace will now resume We only have one major project on the way, which is Tower 1, the Dorset Tower. That's been built adjacent to the existing site, so it's not that disruptive. We may, subject to market conditions, tackle the next tower later this year, but as I said, that depends on what the market conditions are. Over the page 25, Queen's Wharf. Queen's Wharf continues to be on track. Timetable's progressing well. The contracts we've let so far are all on budget and performing well. As I said in the introduction, we expect that in the final quarter of this year, we'll be able to let a very large contract that covers the basement, the shell and core of the integrated resort. Once we've let that, about 60% of the total project cost will be let at fixed price. And then the project, from our point of view, will be very substantially de-risked. And I know that that's been sort of the second big concern that investors had earlier in the year, and I look forward to taking that off the table as well. The key delivery dates remain unchanged. Page 26 shows you some of the updated renders of where the design has gotten to. And finally, on page 27, we just closed by recapping the strategy. Our strategy is simply to develop attraction drivers in a capital-light fashion. These attraction drivers drive visitation, which in turn drives earnings into our properties that we then hope to reinvest into additional attraction drivers and have a reinforcing cycle. How have we delivered against that? I think the scorecard has been good this first half. We have demonstrated above system growth in domestic gaming. The new assets are performing well. Our capital projects are on budget and on time. And the dividend is evidence of our continued focus on shareholder return. So in summary, we think it was a pretty solid first half with an absolute highlight around our Sovereign Room 1.5 and de-risking the performance there. I look forward to de-risking our company further over the next quarter with the Queen's Wharf contract and to drive performance through full implementation of our Centres of Excellence. That's the agenda going forward. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to stop the presentation, and Vincent, I'd like you to open up the line for any questions that we might have down the phone.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question today, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Once again, it's star one if you wish to ask a question today. Your first question comes from the line of Mark Wilson from Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Thanks very much, Matt. Just on the VIP side, were those trends sort of fairly consistent throughout the period in terms of the win rate, the number of turns? And also, I'm just sort of wondering, to what proportion do you attribute the lower number of turns in the period purely to that higher win rate, or is it just that general slowing in the Chinese VIP segment?
Yeah, it's Greg Hawkins here.
Thanks.
I think we've called out that the returns were abnormally low, particularly against the five-year average. Sydney, based on a weighted percentage, had most of the impact on that low turn rate, so that was just above nine turns as well. I think it's a relatively short period to call any significant trends in terms of what's impacted. So your high win rate, low turns, we've referred to strong inbound visitation across the two periods. I think unique visits were actually up period on period. At the same time, front money was basically in line with last year as well. So I think they're both positives to take out. That being said, we continue to sort of watch what's happening in the broader economy from a mainland China point of view and competition in the sector. So I think they're just watches from our point of view, too early to call a trend. And as Matt mentioned, particularly the Gold Coast with the new asset, which is being sold very aggressively into the market, we remain very confident on our market share growth, which continues to be number one into Australia to continue to grow.
Mark, if I can just add one more thing to that. One thing that we are looking at and we're trying to run down is whether the growth in profit share agreements changes the profile of play. So, if in the olden days, if you're on turnover-based programs, the junket had an incentive to keep players at the table for as long as possible because that's the only way for them to make money. Now, if a player loses quickly, then, the junket's happy and there's really no incentive to keep them at the table. So there may be a little bit something in that. So we're doing, we're able to track, obviously, each program and each player bet by bet, and we're analyzing and we're monitoring that. So if you've got greater insights, we'll let you know.
Okay, great. And sorry, just one follow-on there. Did you see similar trends across junket play, Southeast Asian direct premium play and premium mass?
It's effectively dominated by the junket business. So, the weighted position is all junket play. Premium mass continues to be a much smaller percentage of our total turnover. So the turn rate was just heavily influenced by what is effectively 85 to 90% of our total play through junkets.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question today comes on the line of Anthony Longo from CLSA. Please ask your question.
Oh, good morning, Matt. Good morning, Chad. Good morning, Greg. Firstly, I had a question on the domestic business, particularly Sydney. So just wanted to get a sense of the growth rates of the sovereign room versus the rest of the main gaming floor. Are you able to give a bit more context around that?
Look, we used to disclose that, but we no longer are. And the reason why we no longer are was because we noticed, particularly as some old sovereign rooms getting old and full, that more and more players were migrating through different levels of private gaming rooms. So we no longer disclose that. I can tell you, though, that if you look at the performance of the top tier of the loyalty base relative to the unrated business, it's a substantially higher growth rate. So our performance is heavily skewed towards the top end of the pyramid, and all of that play, or most of that play, now happens in the private gaming rooms.
Okay, that's great. And also, I just had a question on VIP as well. So, I mean, completely appreciate the volatility or the inherent volatility of the business and sort of do appreciate the trends you've seen in the first half. But from where you sit, given the backdrop, in your view, what do you think would be an appropriate pass mark for the business for FY19 and the second half?
Sorry, the phone just dropped out. What's an appropriate what?
Oh, sorry, what would be an appropriate pass mark for the VIP business in your view, just given the backdrop of what you're seeing regionally?
Look, we obviously don't get guidance, and particularly not in this business because of the volatility. But structurally, Anthony, I don't see this market having changed all that much. I know that Macau, if you look at the Macau numbers, which is the bulk of the market, they're okay. They're not that terrible. And when we look at our front money and our visitation, we're getting good business through here. And as I said, particularly premium mass, the lower end of that is actually pretty active. So I'd like us, and the team continues to be very focused on driving into the relationships that we have through the junkets in Macau and in the markets outside of North Asia, to, you know, on the strategy that we have forged in the past, and I don't see a change. Longer term, I've previously said, longer term, we model this business on a 10% growth year on year underlying. That's sort of what Wealth Creation Asia has been doing, you know, and given patterns around travel and tourism, that's what we should be achieving over the next 5 years. Now, this year, having had that bumpy win rate in the first half, it's going to be hard, but longer term, we model it on 10% growth.
Okay, that's great. And sorry, final one from me. Just looking at Gold Coast Apartments and that first tower coming up, so I think late last year you did mention that pre-sales had been going well late last year. I just wanted to get a sense for how you're seeing apartment sales prices in the context of the local property market.
Yeah, we are pretty happy with what we're seeing, Anthony. Once we went past 70% of pre-sales, we were able to get bank funding for the tower, which allowed us to give, you know, press the button on proceeding on that. We are now past 88% pre-sold, and we sell a couple of apartments every day. So, and on the current trajectory, we'll be 100% sold out by about April, May. So, and all of the sales now are essentially domestic sales. So I don't know whether we just, you know, have a good product or it's a good price point, but, you know, we're comfortable with the position that we have for that tower. Subject to, you know, our read of the market and our partner's read of the market, as I said, we may then open up to the next tower sale, which may take longer. And the rules for the next tower are exactly the same as the first. We need to get to an appropriate level of pre-sales to be comfortable to press the button.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Your next question today comes from the line of David Fabris from Macquarie. Please ask your question.
Good morning, guys. Look, just looking at costs, it looks like you've done a really good job managing them through the period. But I'm just wondering if you can split out the impacts and just look at the domestic business, because obviously VIP volumes were down significantly in Sydney and up in Queensland. So what was the underlying cost growth ex-VIP?
Yeah, morning, David. So look, excluding VIP within the domestic business underlying, we're tracking about 2% cost growth in the domestic business. I would point out as well is, you know, with the international business and the volume coming off, we have actually been able to maintain margins there as well within that. So on a mix of taking some OPEX out, but also the rebate structures. But underlying from the domestic business, around 2%.
Yeah, okay. And just looking at that cost base, how comfortable are you with the structure? I mean, we are seeing a challenging macro backdrop across, you know, some of your competitors and the local market there. And, you know, how quickly could you respond to a cost-out program if we do see domestic revenues sort of slow down?
Well, I think, yeah, David, we've proven over a number of years now to be very nimble on the cost base. And, you know, we continue to drive efficiencies around our cost base and adjust for the volume. So obviously we look at rosters very carefully. We can adjust rosters at a short period of time within our table game labour in particular, based on the volume that we're seeing, as well as F&B outlets, on what times that we open them during the week and whether we shut them in certain periods of time when we're not seeing the volume. So, but, you know, at the end of the day, 60% of our costs come from labour within our business, and importantly, the rosters is the most important thing for us to be managing effectively as we go through.
And David, the only additional point I want to make is, you know, we won't shy away from taking the cost out, obviously, but, you know, right now, there's life. And there's life in the business, right? So, I mean, we are gaining market share. We're, you know, we've got good momentum. We're busy, you know, so we certainly don't want to torch that momentum in the business and take full advantage of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just a follow-up question to earlier, look, just back on that Sovereign Resort, I know you're not willing to give too much colour on it, but slots growth was really strong in Sydney, and, you know, you've got that new Sovereign Resort slot parlour that's I think was open late in the period. Are you able to give us any indication of how that performed and how much of a contributor that was to the first half result?
Oh, without getting into the specifics, I think we're sort of reinforcing the premium local performance that the business, particularly in Sydney, has been very strong, and that's been split across both table game and slot product. We put a lot of effort into the capital allocation into a temporary room, the capital allocated to the product, and then the allocation of both indoor and outdoor zones for customers to play. All that was then overlapped with a very aggressive relationship marketing model and direct marketing model as well. So I think they're both significant contributors, and we took every effort to make sure we protected the business from our top 10,000 customers, and that focus remained.
The only additional point, David, is the interstate high-end business is doing well for us. So Greg answered his question because Greg has the VIP sales force as well as the interstate sales force, reporting to him as chief casino officer. But that business continues to make very good headway and, showing very nice growth. And that flows essentially into the private gaming room numbers and slots as well as in tables. And we're happy with the continued expansion of that sales force and the results that they're delivering. So, look, that just says that the whole proposition around product, customer service, the hotel, and the food and beverage experience in our destination is compelling.
And just in closing, Matt, apart from domestic, and I think our assets and experiences increase significantly to drive greater inbound domestic play, our international premium mass is one that's also been growing significantly as we're focused on that, and that's both across table games and slot machine player profile activity inbound from North Asia as well. So they continue to be a focus for the sales team and present quite exciting growth opportunities moving forward.
Thank you.
And just to clarify, when did that slot area open, the secondary temporary area?
Oh, the secondary, that opened in late November.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
David, that helps, but I don't think we've seen a dramatic upkick in December as a result of that. So I wouldn't model an acceleration of that just because of those extra 40 slot machines that we have outside.
Okay, thanks for that.
Your next question today comes from the line of Larry Gandler from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Yeah, good day, gentlemen. A few questions on VIP. I don't know why we are disclosing turnover anymore. I guess my question is management. Greg and Matt, are you managing the business to turnover? Or are you managing it to VIP and visitation?
Well, from my point of view, we're managing the business to EBITDA growth and contribution from that particular sector. So that's the primary focus. So
sure.
The margin is a continual focus. The incentives and type of program commissions we have in the market are all there to balance volume generation but ultimately drive profit growth within that sector as well. So that's how we're continually focusing on that.
So, but EBITDA, if it's a function of normalized turnover, that would seem strange to manage the business that way, considering it's pretty much an output. If you get the visitation, you get the front money, your players have a good time, even though they may not have turned it over as much. That, to me, would be a good management outcome.
Larry, you're taking us back to where we were in 2015, which, I salute your intellectual rigor because you're now endorsing the position we had back then, saying we normalize around essentially front money. Because at the end of the day, we want people to come in, bring in a lot of business, and stick around and take risks with that front money. But, unfortunately, you may recall that normalization around front money wasn't a particular success with investors. So we've gone back to an approach that is more widely accepted in the market. I also want to say, Larry, I know VIP is everybody's excited about VIP. So are we, and it's icing on the cake for us. But it's only 15% of EBITDA. It swings around a lot. It swings our results around a lot. I understand that. But, domestic business is the engine room of our profitability.
Yes, understood. But I might continue my line of questioning around VIP, Matt. Just maybe, Chad, the overdue receivables, more than 1 year, they seem to have ticked up. I'm just wondering what your sense is there, whether there's an air of nervousness around that. And also, you know, the other part of that bar chart is 30 to 100 days, and that line jumped up significantly as well. I'm just wondering, within the range of 30 to 100 days, is it aging more towards 100, or is it still, you know, maybe closer to 30?
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Look, it's the big one there on the gold bar, the 30 to 100 days, is really, you know, across a few players, as we've already mentioned before earlier in the presentation. Mm-hmm. Right, and some of those players have continued to pay us since half-year end. And so, you know, and the outstanding players we've actually known for quite a period of time. They've played here before. They've had some significant debts with us before and have paid them fully. And we fully believe they have the capacity to continue to pay the debt. So, look, there's nothing that's worrying us at the moment, but there's always a little bit of a arm wrestle at times that you go on to get your debts paid.
Sorry, Larry, the only other thing is we have a provisioning policy that does not allow for judgment. So our provision policy is fully driven by the actual aging of the debt. And so whether we like it or not, whether we know the customer or not, if that customer doesn't pay back in the right windows, we start to provide appropriately.
So okay, that's good to know.
That mechanism has been consistent now for the last few results, and so that's why we're pretty comfortable with the position we have.
I should also add, Larry, I'm not sure if you made the point, the 1 year to 3 year debtors too has actually reduced on prior periods as well. So there's nothing there that's really concerning us at the moment. It's just a process we go through at times of getting some of these payments through.
Okay, excellent. Two more questions. Restructuring costs, what were they? I mean, were they previously flagged, and are you flagging any for FY or 2H19?
Look, the restructuring costs relate to the creation of these centers of excellence. We have had, over the last 6 months, we've turned over about 15% of our general manager pool. And that's created the opportunity for us to bring in some of that international talent that we said and, you know, refresh the pool of capability. And so it's all redundancy cost, largely redundancy cost and restructuring cost. That's now largely behind us. There's a little bit that's dribbling into the second half, but I don't think it will meet the standards of a significant item at this point.
Okay. And last question, if I can. Just on coming back to VIP, you know, we had that exchange control regulation modified in China. And as I understand it, Chad, with your front money, you would take a deposit into your bank from a junkets bank. Is that correct?
No, Larry, most of the time is we're giving what are called check cashing facilities, effectively a credit line for the junkets within it. So it's not front money in terms of how you think of cash being deposited. Some junkets do, some players do, but in the main we're giving credit lines to those junkets.
I see, okay. All right, then I'll take the rest of that question offline. Thanks.
Well, it's probably relevant in terms of the settlement, because then at the end of the month, so every month we then square up with the junkets and the direct players, and they then have to settle. And somehow money has to change hands and get into our system. And that continues to be, not a straightforward and sometimes problematic situation. Particularly, it's not a problem when it comes in through the international banking system. It's a problem when somebody wants to bring you $10 million worth of cash.
Yeah, of course. And if it comes in through an international bank, is that an issue for you guys?
No, that's great, because, you know, ultimately we are under the same AML and CTF regulation as any other financial institution.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if it comes in, it's much beneficial for it's beneficial for us if it comes through a recognized institution with a great AML track record that we can rely on.
Okay, excellent.
Your next question today comes to the line of Rowan Thundram from MST. Please ask your question.
Morning, gents. I might just start with a question for Matt. Mindful of the solid growth you're achieving across all your segments in domestic, but how would you describe the consumer environment right now amongst top end versus the low end, given the growth you've reported?
Some of your colleagues have done some fantastically interesting work around the impact of house prices on discretionary expenditure and so on. And, you know, when house prices started to turn, I think we were all sort of a little bit nervous. We're not really seeing all that much. And if I look at the business, you know, the private gaming rooms continue to perform well. Now, I realize we're probably taking a bit of share, but the top end of the pyramid is performing well. The mass market is probably not as exuberant as it was a little while, 12 months ago. But that's, you know, that's often got to do with the uncertainty around elections. There's a fair bit of election hearing that's happening in New South Wales and now it will soon happen federally. So I think there's a bit of a nervousness that we have, but I can't see it in the numbers at this point.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
So, yeah, I'm not sure it's helpful because all I'm saying is, you know, we share your concerns, but we can't see it.
That's fair enough. I guess it was, is it fair that I was assuming a slower second half anyway and had concerns around the election? So, but I just thought the first half numbers were quite encouraging.
Yeah, that's good. Momentum is encouraging. Absolutely. And, you know, I also look at the second half and think we've been a construction site from the Porker share in the main entrance for such a long time because we were held up with planning approvals. That is now all coming to an end. Right now there's a lot of noise still on the floor because of the heavy works of the southern room. That's going to stop to quieten down. The cranes aren't going to disappear, but the really disruptive stuff is going to quiet down in the next 6 weeks. I'm very optimistic about Sydney. Gold Coast is a great looking asset. Gold Coast market is probably a harder one to read. And Brisbane is doing well. You know, I'm very happy with what the team is doing in Brisbane. And we gave them a mandate to keep earnings flat to, you know, till the opening of Queen's Wharf, and they're doing much better than that. So look, I'm not entirely naive here, but I'm feeling pretty good about, the medium-term outlook for us.
So, and how's the Darling tracking relative to your expectations in Gold Coast?
Look, I do come back to the numbers that we're showing around private gaming rooms and the VIP business. The Darling in Sydney is a leisure hotel and is doing exceptionally well as for a leisure customer. Top end of the game is also frequented, but a lot of them actually prefer the Astro. In the Gold Coast, the Darling is a gaming hotel. It's vastly, 90% of the visitation is used for gaming. And from that point of view, we're very happy with the way the property is performing.
Thanks, Matt. Cheers.
Thank you. One more.
Your next question today comes to the line of Matt Ryan from UBS. Please ask your question.
Hi, Matt. I just wanted to follow up on that last question. So I too thought the trading update for this year was pretty solid. In particular, the Star performance within that must be pretty good. You've obviously explained the disruption that's going on. I saw it firsthand the other day. It's probably some of the worst disruption that I've seen. So, you know, is it fair to say that, you know, the property's actually done a lot better than what you would have thought over these weeks? And can you just confirm that comment before that major piece of disruption below the Sovereign Room, I'm speaking about the main sort of centre part of Sydney's main floor, that will be pretty much complete in 6 weeks, did you say?
Yep, I can confirm that. So I can confirm, look, in terms of our expectations, you may recall the discussion we had 6 months ago and that sort of the question was, is Sydney going to be stable? And we said, yeah, look, we expect some disruption, but we hope to offset it through organic growth. I think we've demonstrated that we're doing that and then some. So that's certainly pleasing. In terms of disruption on the from some room. You know, right now we have during the peak work periods, which are set from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock, we have to take certain sections of the main floor out because of, you know, OH&S and operating risk and so on. All that we expect will disappear within the next 6 weeks. So that's why I'm pretty positive.
Okay. And then I'm just trying to sort of back out the impact of the turns, the low turns within VIP. So the $60 to $100 million in revenue that you sort of talk about in the presentation, obviously you could take tax off that at 10% and then commissions at about 55% of revenue, according to your disclosure. So you'd really need to add back something like $20 to $30 million to normalize EBITDA. Is that a rough estimate of where you guys got to?
This sounds very similar to the bonus discussion that I'm having with the team here.
Is that a yes?
That's a yes.
Okay. Thanks. And just one last one. So I think we've spoken about in the past benefits to VIP margins from lower commissions, et cetera. So looks like that benefit in the half would have been about 4% to revenue. So I'm just trying to think about whether I'm missing anything else, but it sounds like your VIP margins probably move from, let's say, low teens to high teens now on a go-forward basis?
No, actually, margins have stayed pretty much the same, Matt, from half to half. What you've got is your rebates and your commissions are down, and OPEX is down, and combined together, they're down pretty much the same level as revenue. So we've been able to maintain margins within the business, not expand them at this point.
Yeah, but I guess revenue during this period was disproportionately hurt by an abnormal turn rate. So I guess just looking forward into a normalised world, you know, can we start to think about high teens EBITDA margins where previously we were sort of speaking about low teens? Is that a fair assumption?
No, I wouldn't be going there at this point.
But I guess your rate cards come down 4% of revenue, and assuming a normal period of turns, and the adjustment that you've made to your cost base, wouldn't you be getting a margin improvement moving forward?
You're right. If all the things being equal, if the fixed costs hadn't changed and we would have had that normalized rate card on the expanded revenue, you're right, we would have had a margin expansion.
Okay.
I guess what we're saying is, look, the rate card has allowed us to offset the impact of the negative operating leverage on the fixed cost. And that's why we've maintained margin.
There's sure. Also the variable costs in your OPEX line as well, Matt. So it's not just purely in your rebates.
Yep. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. I think it looks like we're out of questions. Thank you, everybody, for calling in. And I'm sure I'm going to see many of you over the next little while. Take care. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. We thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.